Time for a little football talk. The main man, Carolina Panthers play-by-play man, Mick Mixon. What's going on, Mick?
How could I be the main man when you're the main man?
only in my own mind.
Yeah, that was nice, though. That way to butter up the hosts. Love it.
Is it nice down in Jacksonville? Are you there yet?
Not there yet. We don't leave till around lunchtime today. Excuse me. Sorry about that. My goodness. But I've been up since about 5:15 studying up on some Jacksonville Jaguars, trying to see kind of what kind of challenge this is going to be. It's something that we've been doing all week. The Panthers getting ready, broadcast crew, equipment guys, everybody getting ready to go down there. And I don't know. This happens to me all the time. My mind starts playing tricks on me. This looked like a win for the Panthers when the schedule first came out. But the closer you get to it, you start thinking, oh, gosh, they got Blake Bortles. I remember him. He played well at the end of last year. Mercedes Lewis, T.J. Yeldon. I mean, they've got weapons.
Well, and I'm sitting here right now looking at the Panthers roster, and, of course, I'm scrolling right down to those guys with high numbers, and I'm looking at we've got Philly Brown, Jericho Cotchery, Devin Funchess, Ted Ginn Jr., and Kevin Norwood. That's what remains of our wide receiver core heading into this game and as far as we can tell, the foreseeable future. Do we have enough weapons? I mean, obviously Olsen makes a big difference if they line him up in the slot when they do and when he goes out and runs those circle routes from the tight end position. But do the Panthers have enough weapons in the air game?
Well, we'll find out. And don't forget, Mike Tolbert and Jonathan Stewart are very good receivers. Fozzie Whitaker as well coming out of the backfield. They can catch. I think Cameron Artis Payne, rather, is going to be a good weapon, as well as Brandon Williams, a backup tight end. But, I mean, I get your larger point. There's no Kelvin Benjamin. There's no way I could – it's still a side-hill five-footer. Even if I mark my ball again and re-spot it, it's still going to be a side-hill five-footer. There's no way to candy coat it. We just got to knock it right in the heart. But there's nobody else on our club that can do what Kelvin Benjamin can do. Devin Funchess is an enticing prospect because he is long, like Benjamin, but he's just a different athlete. He's smoother, maybe a better hand catcher, a better catcher of the ball than Benjamin. Benjamin had 10 drops last year, but Benjamin is so good in the red zone. He can make the acrobatic catch, and he and Cam Newton just seem to have they just seem to have that kind of brother-in-law thing that all the good captain's choice teams have.
All right, so for me, it doesn't matter, who's catching the ball, who's throwing the ball, who's running the ball. If you can't get some kind of protection out of your offensive line when you're in a passing play, or you can't get a little push out of the line when you're running the ball, it's not going to matter. What do we expect from this offensive line out of the Carolina Panthers?
I think you can win a Super Bowl with the first five. I think this is what the Panther coaches feel, is that the guards, Norwell and Turner, are very, very good. Ryan Khalil, the anchor man in the middle, the center, proven commodity, four-time Pro Bowler. The tackles, Michael Orr, definitely an upgrade over Byron Bell from a year ago, and I'm not saying anything mean about Byron
right.
Bell. I mean, just
he's Michael Orr.
Michael Orr has won a Super Bowl. He's an elite player, and he's come in and learned the system and done a really good job. I think the potential problem for the Panthers could be depth. I mean, there's some good young linemen behind them, but there's – I think if that first five, if that group could stay healthy, I think that – and then Remmers being backed up by Darrell Williams at the right tackle. I think if that group could stay healthy, I think it could be a great front five.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Patriots the other night, and they roll out three basically untested guys, three rookies out there in their offensive line, and their offensive line looked pretty good. It really does come down to how well the guys work together, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And Ron Rivera's got what he calls his glove theory, and he explained that to me. It's not particle physics. It's pretty easy to understand, but when he went over it in the preseason, I was talking to him one day about his glove theory, and it made sense. I mean, Mike Remmer's a good example. Andrew Norwell's a good example. Andrew Norwell, a guard, came in last year early in camp, looked okay, but was losing some of his individual battles in the one-on-one pass rush drill, Charles Johnson run over him. But then when you put Norwell in the glove, when he becomes one of the five fingers in the glove of synchronicity up front, everything changes. He meshes well with other players. He knows where to be. He communicates well. Some of the combative spirit in him comes out. Am I making any sense in what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
It makes sense to me, but hopefully it's coming through the radio.
No, for sure. I mean, when that group acts as a unit, I mean, they're stronger than any of the individual parts. And frankly, I think what Rivera does well is he looks at chemistry, because not anybody can just be put in as one of those five fingers and have it work. It doesn't work as well if you don't have great chemistry. So, you know, I love the glove theory. And I think any NFL team, by the way, that claims that depth isn't a problem is lying. When you get to a 53-man roster in the NFL, everybody has a problem with depth. Everybody.
Oh, I know. And then there's seven inactives, so you got 40. You're rolling with 46.
Yeah.
On game day, and it's to look at the roster. If you could come to my house right now and see, or come on the plane with us and see my depth charts that I make up for every game, and compare those to what it looks like during the preseason, when there's 90 guys on the roster, or even a college game that you'd have to prepare for, where there's you got guys out in the margin and you're writing sideways to fit them all in, it looks like chicken scratch on your board. It's not that many players that are active for each team. So you're right, one injury, brick in the wall, there goes a guy on special teams because he has to come in and play, say, starting linebacker if one of your backers gets hurt. Then you have to bring a third-tier guy in to play on special teams, and in a lot of cases, there is no third-tier guy because you've only got two deep, offense and defense.
Right. It starts to look like a baseball prep if you're getting ready to do the play-by-play. The lineup gets pretty short. Well, we're talking to Mick Mixon, play-by-play, you know, rock star. I'm going to go rock star. Play-by-play rock star for the Panthers. Did you happen to watch the Steelers running back the other night? And
some guy.
Did we have any separation anxiety from D'Angelo Williams, who lost 15 pounds and seems to have found a game?
A little bit. First of all, your show just lost a lot of credibility calling me a rock star. I'm a little bit old. My idea of a drink after work is a Metamucil with some Gatorade after I get off the treadmill. But
hey, got to keep it regular, brother. Got to keep it regular.
That's right. But yeah, I did watch the game. I thought a game was never going to break out. It just was so much Mardi Gras and the Patriots getting I thought they were going to tear their rotator cuff, patting themselves on the back.
Easy now.
For the
Easy now.
Super Bowl win a year ago. Of course, a little bit is I'm jealous, because wouldn't it be great to see all that at Bank of America Stadium?
It would.
Maybe someday. Why is it that players, once they leave the Panthers, that's when they lose 15 pounds? That's when they get in double shape. Steve Smith did the same thing when he went to Baltimore.
No kidding. It's like they leave here and they get mad and they get good.
I know. Well, it's like anybody that's ever, anybody listening that's ever been divorced, think back to your high school and college days. As soon as they leave the mothership, that's when they start looking good.
All right. So Panthers last year 7-8-1, win the division. What's it going to take this year for the Panthers to win the division?
Well, first of all, the schedule, the NFL is all about windows, right? I mean, if you're lucky enough, you draft well, you get a good trigger man, you get some personality players on D, and you get a coaching staff that's vibrant. The Panthers have a young coaching staff with some guys on it that are going to be head coaches one day. This coaching staff, I mean, you look up and down, walk up and down the offices over on the football side of our building and say, these guys, I mean, we'll think back on a day, I think, when we go, what? Are you kidding me? We had Ricky Prohl. We had Eric Washington. We had Steve Wilks. We had Mike Shula, Sean McDermott, all on the same staff. That's killer, because a lot of those guys are going to be head coaches. And then if the schedule gives you the opportunity, at least, to get off to a good start, then the window's open. Mm-hmm. And so I think for the Panthers to smash through the window, it's going to take taking advantage of this four-game stretch. Now, there's tough teams on here. I mean, Houston, New Orleans, at Jacksonville, like we said, Tampa Bay. But, I mean, why not set your goals high? I mean, 4-0, 3-1 at the bye week. The bye week comes at a good time. And then you come out of the bye week and go west to Seattle. That's when the real brutal stretch begins. So I think a good start is going to be key. The Panthers aren't going to be able to fiddle around like we did last year. Last year, Carolina was 2-0, 3-2, but then had the bad stretch where we could not couldn't win a game. Ended up being 3-8-1. We were in the Mo, Larry, and Curly division, fortunately, or else we don't make the playoffs. So we got to be a little tighter than we were last year.
Well, another expert that we share, Mike Rucker. I mean, he's been on the show. I've known Mike for years. He made a bold statement that this was definitely the over under for Vegas was 8.5, and he said take the over. I had a friend in Vegas at the time, and I took the over. So comes Greeny.
Wait a minute, Mick. The problem is Mike took the over with his guy in Vegas, and 30 minutes later, Kelvin Benjamin blew out a knee. So blame him.
No, don't blame me.
Yes, for the bet.
No, don't blame me. So am I going to win my, I don't know, it was a cheap bet. Am I going to win my $16, Mick?
All I got to say about that is, and I have a lot of respect for you guys, love your show, but if you wager even one penny on any sporting event, then that is just barking mad. No one knows. The coaches devote their lives to this. They study every nuance, every play, every tendency, every film, and they have no idea who's going to win. So I would say buy some stock.
A couple weeks ago, that didn't work out so well.
I was buying stock in Mike Rucker.
Take that money and buy some stock.
when Benjamin went down, I thought I should have taken that money and thrown it off an overpass here on Brookshire Freeway because I probably wouldn't have gotten as much joy out of it.
Here's an even better idea. Get on eBay and buy you a set of Hogan Edge irons, re-grip them, and put them in the closet and see if they appreciate.
All right, so
your chances are better than trying to guess on pro football.
All right, so Mick, here's the $10 million question. You guys are leaving this afternoon. You're going down to Jacksonville. Have you convinced them yet to just go ahead and drop you off at TPC Sawgrass so you can get around in?
I don't want to play Sawgrass. I played it one time with a great friend of mine, Bob Galloway, and he is so gracious, a former pro, a club pro, and sort of the Harvey Penick of guys. And Bobby G, we played it, and I probably shot 90, but I hit a 7-iron to about 8 feet on 17 and rolled it right in the cup, straight up the hill, no break. So with a birdie on number 17, I'd never want to play Sawgrass again.
Well, okay, so what'd you do on 18 then?
Oh, gosh, 18 is a little bit of a handful. I really didn't play well that day. It's the course was – I couldn't believe how difficult it was, just the subtleties of the course. And sort of the contours of the fairways had almost felt like it had a little bit of a lynx kind of feel to it, and not necessarily to your eye, but ball took some crazy bouncing. You come up over the ridge expecting to see your ball in the middle of the fairway, and it's way over to the right. Crazy things. Probably just me. It's a great track though. Do y'all know Ward Clayton?
No, don't.
Ward Clayton. He's a friend of mine. He works for the PGA Tour down there. And one of these days, maybe I will get back. Are there other good courses in the area you recommend?
Well, there's another one right across the street in Sawgrass from the TPC course, the course that they originally played the Players' Championship on. That's a really good course as well.
How do you guys feel about the Nicklaus? When Nicklaus was in his, I almost think he was using intoxicants or something at this time. I'm sure that's not right, but some of his courses that he designed early in his career with looks like half the green was blown out by a grenade and just deep bunker. I mean, those courses are all right if you can hit a 1-iron from 240 and with a 5-yard fade.
Yeah, you know, those courses were probably designed for greens that weren't rolling as fast and as firm as they are today, and that's part of the problem. I mean, you look at a bunch of die courses as well, and when they take die courses and they go to, you know, some of these new strains of Bermuda grass that gets so firm and so fast, and, you know, the funny thing is you go back, you hear these things, well, why didn't they recontour the greens? Well, Mr. Dye wouldn't let us do it. Well, at some point, you got to relent and allow a softening of some of these slopes, and right. Jack's courses are the same way.
Some of the Nicklaus courses, when I was playing more golf in the 90s, the banks weren't mowed. So you'd hit, for me, a 6-iron from 155 or so, and a good shot, I mean, a high-quality shot, I'm proud of it, and it hits the green and rolls off the back edge, and now I'm in the rough. I'm only 6 feet off the green, but I'm in the rough, and you're just playing a chunk and run, you know, Pinehurst has it right. I mean, give you a chance. Mow the banks. Give you a chance to play different kinds of shots. One of my favorite courses in North Carolina is Uwari Point.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Old North State course. I mean, it's fair. If your good shots are rewarded, your bad shots are penalized. Pinehurst is awesome. I love Pinehurst.
Well, there you go. Well, you know what? Have fun this weekend. Bring the Panthers home a victory back to Charlotte, and we'll catch up with you some other time during the season. How's that sound?
Oh, you guys are great, man. Thanks. I hope I didn't sound too much like a curmudgeonly old man. Greeny, you can make bets if you want to. It'd be all right.
That's Mike. I just got back from Vegas. I did not place one sports bet.
And I just put Metamucil and Gatorade on my shopping list, so I'm ready.
Oh, I'm telling you, there's nothing like it. A little G2 and a couple teaspoons full, man, it's good living.
Oh, man. Thanks a lot, Mick.
See you guys.
All right.